They say you can't fight City Hall and win, but what if City Hall prohibits you from growing your own food? That prohibition leads us to ask, how can one fight City Hall and win?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1370th edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Lyon who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, one thing we have learned from the COVID years is that our food chain has some very weak links. And that is a cause of concern for all of us who eat food for a living. Consequent to that concern, many of the hungry have turned to growing their own food. Only a very few can grow all of the food they need, but many can grow some of the food they need in a garden. Those who do garden enjoy the physical benefits of eating the food they have grown, but also the spiritual benefits of growing that food. But wait, what if City Hall prohibits the growing of food within its city limits? Sounds perfectly crazy, don't you think? Not so, say most cities. In fact, only 6 states in the United States have passed legislation guaranteeing citizens the right to garden within the limits of cities. Florida was the first such state to grant such a right in 2019. Illinois became the second state in 2021. Those who won the right to garden in the city lead us to ask, how can one fight City Hall and win? Who better to ask than a winner? She being Nicole Virgil, gardener and practitioner of Christian Science with the First Church of Christ Scientist. Nicole, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hi, Michael. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm so happy. Ladies and gentlemen, I've been trying to get Nicole on my Food Chain Radio program for a long, long time, and I'm so happy to have her here today. So only the second state. That's a magnificent victory to be able to convince the state legislature to back your right to garden. So as soon as I saw that article somewhere along the lines, I thought, this is a very interesting situation. One, because somebody is actually fighting to secure the right to grow their own food in a city. And second, but the way she fights is very interesting indeed. I thought, we can all learn a lot from this. So you fought for how long to win the right to grow food, Nicole?
In total, it was just over 6 years, start to finish, I believe. We fought for 3 or 4 years at the municipal level. And when it was clear that our city government would only ban our capacity to keep our vegetables going through the winter, which is the point of contention, then we had to level up to the state legislature and protect our old property rights there for not only ourselves and our municipal residents, but for everybody in the state of Illinois while we're at it.
Who's our? You must be talking.
Well, my husband and myself. My husband, Dan Virgil, is kind of a handy guy. He grew up in Indiana. His mother gardened a lot, so he came into our marriage with a pretty good understanding of and growing food and sort of being connected to food and plants and ecology and that sort of thing. I'm a city girl. I'm from the New England, Southwest Connecticut area. I didn't grow up gardening anything. But after marriage and having kids, we thought it'd be good to have some food that wasn't injected or sprayed with this or that and was fresher than not, because food starts to deteriorate as soon as it's harvested. And we thought we would put our best efforts towards providing some of that food as we were homeschooling our kids. And, you know, we'd have some lettuce in the backyard or some simple things that we could grab. But turns out the growing season in our area is pretty short. So So we wanted to lengthen it with a garden cover, otherwise known as the hoop house. And that's where we ran into some difficulty.
Well, good. Now, you're no stranger to difficulties. Before the show, we were talking about your pursuit of a degree, and it wasn't just any degree that you pursued. It was a degree in what?
My undergraduate degree is in Italian vocal literature. So I studied the works of Puccini and Mozart, and I learned to sing opera and speak Italian.
There you go, from Chicago to Italy via song and literature, spoken literature. Good. The fight with City Hall. Now, that's kind of an interesting fight because it lasted 6 years, and you and your husband, Dan, must have reached down deep for some kind of strength to stand up to not only City Hall, but the state legislature as well, just for the right to have a hoop house, not even in your front yard, in the backyard. So I think a lot of this must have come from some place deep down inside. And I suspect that Christian Science must have had something to do with that, because you're not only are you a gardener, but you're a lecturer with the First Church of Christ Scientists. So perhaps you would be so kind as to tell the audience a little bit about the science of Christian Science.
Yeah, well, Christian Science is so called because it is the science or the study of the laws, the principles that undergird Christianity. What is it that makes it work? What's the science behind it? And that makes Christianity something, when we look at the teachings of Christ Jesus, it doesn't have to be something that some people can have access to and some people can't if you have a certain talent or a certain gift, but rather it's a principle, a divine principle, which when followed, anybody can follow these teachings, because it's rather clear. Like when you follow the principle of mathematics, you wouldn't think that it has to do with your personality, but rather your willingness to follow the order of operations laid out in the science of math, or to follow the principle of addition or subtraction. And so Christianity has its divine principle, which is ultimately love. And Christ Jesus talked about how to express this love, the qualities of love, love being another name for God. And to me, one of the things that I've been thinking about so long in my life is one of the aspects that is conferred upon mankind by this divine love, this divine principle, is freedom. It's God-given. And we have the opportunity to exercise it, utilize it. You can give it away, or you could try, but through lack of protection or lack of exercise. But that's not the inclination of a Christian Scientist, because we understand the principle of living, or right living, requires that we utilize, respect, and exercise all these God-given aspects, again, one of which is freedom. But when this situation, which appeared to be removing my freedom, came about in my town, I didn't really feel I had an option. As a Christian Scientist, scientists must follow and understand the law. So I followed the science of Christianity through divine love and exercised my divine right to stand up with principle and freedom.
Well, I've had plenty of experience in my life to go up against City Hall in one shape or another. I remember being a student body president of a college at a particularly contentious time in American history, Vietnam War, that kind of stuff. And when we went up against City Hall, it wasn't with love at all. It was with hate and discontent as much as we could muster up. And, it kind of broke me in a way. And I had to go away and get a job on a ranch in Montana and do physical work to pull myself together from that. But I don't think you approached it with that kind of, how do you approach City Hall with love?
Well, I should be clear. I should have explained or defined the terms a little bit. When Christian Science is talking about divine love, it's not talking about human affection. We're not talking about the warm fuzzies and the snuggly snugglies. Human affection is wonderful, but the scope of divine love is far broader and more potent than human affection. So just to define the terms more clearly, if we're going to get into the realm of divine love, we're talking about omnipotent God, which is synonymous with principle. This principle is what corrects and governs all of the universe. It's nothing mushy to be talked about. It embodies and imbues dignity and respect and the expectation of equality. So when I was looking around my community and I saw that other people had implements, devices, hoop houses, trampolines, ice rinks, whatever in their backyard, and yet I was being denied the same level of equality, you see, this is under the umbrella of divine love. Divine love does not allow for inequality because God made us all equal. And under that principle, I have, as a Christian Scientist, a duty to stand for that equality. These are the functions of divine love. It's not about human kindness, although human kindness can be part of it, but it's something much more robust and effective and potent. And yet it's love because love is a name for God, but it's not that thing that many people think of when they think of human love or kindness. It can be a little squishy. That's not what I'm talking about here. We're talking about divine principle. It's got a titanium backbone.
We're talking about being a spiritual warrior, aren't we?
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's right.
Wow. Okay. And today we're talking about going to war for the right to grow food in your own backyard in Elmhurst, Illinois, which is a suburb of Chicago, right?
Yes, sir.
Now, I've had some truly wonderful experiences with Chicago. One of the best being an occasion of the National Booksellers Association convention in Chicago one spring, and I was there peddling one of my books, but it happened to be the first nice weather of spring in Chicago. Also happened to be the occasion of the Chicago Blues Festival. So Chicago was imbued with wonderful warm weather, people coming out for the first time since winter, blues on every street corner, magnificent storytelling everywhere you looked. I thought Chicago was the best place on earth during that particular weekend. Then again, I got caught in a blizzard in O'Hare Airport and was marooned there for a while. And I didn't think that was the case very much longer. But at any rate, Second City is a magnificent place. And there's two different places. There's Chicago and there's Elmhurst. And they're very close together, yet they're very far apart in some respects. And Nicole Virgil's war took place first in Elmhurst. And so when we come back from this break, we're going to talk about the difference between Elmhurst and Chicago, and the front yard and the backyard, and war and peace with the city of Elmhurst and the state of Illinois. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Today we have Nicole Virgil, who is a gardener and a practitioner of Christian Science, First Church of Christ Scientist. And what we've learned so far, it's not a squishy kind of love we're talking about. Do stay tuned, right back.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Boy, we are having a good time today fighting for the right to grow food in our backyard. Now, you would think that would be perfectly legitimate everywhere in the world, in the United States, grow food in your backyard. But what if you're in Chicago and you need to have some protection for those plants back there? Maybe you want to go put up a little hoop house, but then you run up against City Hall. And how many of us run up against City Hall? And how do you win? Well, today we're talking with Nicole Virgil, who went up against City Hall with divine love and won. And
yes,
so we're going to learn
sir.
About fighting City Hall. We're learning about divine love, and we're meeting a very interesting lady, Nicole Virgil. Nicole, Elmhurst, Illinois. Tell us a little bit about your city.
Yeah, Elmhurst is a suburb of Chicago, about 12 miles due west of Chicago. If you know, we're right on Lake Michigan. So it's pretty close to Chicago, but the ethos of a suburb is not often the same as you might find in an urban area. And I'm happy to say that although Chicago, is very different in its demographics and size and density, they have great protection for urban gardening down there. You could have just about any kind of livestock you wanted if you have room for chickens or growing food and all sorts of creative stuff going on down in Chicago. And it's provided for in their city codes. Unfortunately, when you get out to the suburbs, there can be a different sentiment about wanting the yards to look a certain way or be manicured, or even it's kind of a fear of we don't want it to look country. A long time ago in the country, people used to have chickens and hogs and raise food, and we're past that now. We're above that. Only everybody's still got to eat. So how are you going to be past it? You can't be above it. Fresh fruit is fresh food. There's no way to get past it. And with the advent of supermarkets and conveniences and airplanes that can fly food from California where you are through the winter, over the decades, people have forgotten the very basic things that people used to do to maintain their own lives. I admit myself, I had to go to YouTube to learn how to cut up a chicken, because nobody in my family knew how to do it. Like, this used to be commonplace. And same thing for growing food. When I wanted to teach my kids how to do it, because I was homeschooling them, and I thought it would be easier to get fresh lettuce out of the backyard than to try to recover some slimy lookalike lettuce from the back of my refrigerator, I had to figure out how to grow stuff, because it's just not in the common vernacular of thought anymore. And so other things have become prioritized, the length of one's lawn and the appearance of one's home and the type of car and where you eat out. These things are very commonly in the priority of thought. It's in the lexicon of discussion between moms at school, et cetera. And no one's really thinking about, what are you eating? That is not sort of in the common day ethos of things. So when a very typical and common structure, such as the hoop house, is utilized by a resident to grow food, people are thinking, what is that? Is that a pot house? Is that some kind of nefarious thing? It's just because the thought of growing food, which in our climate requires some type of protection, it's just not in the common vernacular of thought. And so this is going to run into ignorance and confusion, just because in the past 7, 8, 9 decades, we've stopped taking care of ourselves this way. And I was even told by one of my aldermen, I didn't need to grow food. He said, we gave you whole foods, so you don't need to grow. just a different thought.
So we become, in moving into the suburbs and into the cities, we become quite prissy in how we think things should be conducted. We go ahead.
Yeah, just speed and convenience. We're interested in speed and convenience. for a lot of things. And you can't prioritize speed and convenience and quality food at the same time. Good food is slow food. Fast food is convenient, but it's not quality. So you can choose. You choose.
Michael Olson's third law of the food chain: cheap food isn't, and it isn't. You know, with respect to you started growing food in your backyard, but not your front yard. Why not the front yard? What is the difference between a front yard and a backyard?
Well, in Elmhurst, we can grow food anywhere on our property, but structures are prohibited in the front yard. Like I said, I didn't know what I was doing when I was starting, so I didn't have any particular intent. I just started with 4-foot by 4-foot little raised bed to grow some lettuce and a few onions. It's after that I kind of grew in my knowledge. I started listening to wise people like Joel Salatin and learning on YouTube about the possibilities of urban gardening, and I just got into it more and more. And our lot is set up in such a way that the backyard makes sense. It's right adjacent to my kitchen. So every home is going to have different, you know, sun exposure, drainage, et cetera. So for my lot, the backyard worked the best.
A natural. And so you started growing there. But you put up a hoop house, which seemed like the perfectly reasonable thing to do to protect your plants and get more growth out of them in a longer year, but not so much for the neighbors, right?
Well, at some point we got a cease and desist order on our hoop house, and we didn't really understand why. It turns out one of our neighbors had reported the hoop house to City Hall, although we didn't honestly know that we were doing anything wrong. We weren't thinking we had done anything wrong. But they sent code enforcement out to our house, and code enforcement told us to stop. We didn't know who was complaining at the time, but there had been many assertions made, and it turned out it was kind of a moving target. The neighbors would surreptitiously report to the city, because they weren't talking to us, we didn't know who they were, that the hoop house was all at once a sound. It was sound pollution. It was causing too much noise.
The hoop house?
The hoop house was making noise. Also, that they could not sleep because of the noise, and that there was a strange glare coming off the hoop house, which penetrated their window coverings and made it so bright in their house that they were unable to peacefully enjoy their property. Also, that the hoop house was bringing down property values in the neighborhood. They would be unable to sell for a decent price. Remembering that this is a temporary structure, like a trampoline, so it's not something that would have any permanent impact on anything. They claimed that the hoop house made as much noise as a freight train going through their yard, and that they were unable to sleep for months at a time. So a variety of things they were telling City Hall. And so we, of course, immediately obeyed the cease and desist order, and we went to City Hall and said, hey, what's up? And they said, you got to take this down. And we said, well, wait a second. We don't understand. We talked with them this first year. This is 2015. And once they understood what we were trying to do and it was temporary, they said, you know what? As long as it's temporary, you're okay. And so we continued for that year, and it was fine. And many of our neighbors around us were so impressed. They were like, this is great. We should do this too. You know, it was great. And then when the next year rolled around, 2016, we went to put it up again in the fall, and we got another cease and desist letter. We're like, wait a second, we just went through this. Like, what is the problem? And this time they kind of dug in and said, you got to take it down. We don't like it. And so at that point I said, okay, you know what? Reading is fundamental. Well, I'd like to read the statute or the ordinance that you say that we are breaking. Please inform me of that statute. And they were unable to do so just because there wasn't one. And so after a few weeks, they sent us a letter indicating that we were violating a statute which says that you may not live in a tent in the backyard. A human being may not live in a membrane structure or tent on a single family lot. And we said, that's great, because nobody's living in there. These are plants. They're not humans. It's, you know, that's cool. And so if I read this is not indicated towards anything that we're doing. This is not a relevant piece of ordinance for our situation. And our city manager, he was very offended at that. And he said, I'm the city manager. That ordinance means what I say it means. And that was the moment that my science training kicked in, because this is not principled. You see, this is very personal now. It can't, words have meaning. They don't mean what you say it means. Really they mean what they mean.
Really quick back up with the science. We're talking about the Christian science that there are rules that govern things. And they're not the municipal rules of a city government. They are?
Well, it's this divine principle again, the law of divinity, which requires honesty, transparency. The law is fixed, right? It's like the law of addition, 2 + 2 = 4. It's the same for everybody. It's universal. It doesn't change depending upon who's saying it. And so when I'm a Christian scientist, when I start to hear someone saying, well, it means what I say it means on Monday, and then it can change to what I say something different on Tuesday. This is not principle. This is personal and emotional. And that's not what I submit to. I submit to divine principle, God, not personal emotions. So then I am required as a Christian scientist to say, wait a second, that's not how we roll. We do have to have municipal laws. I'm not an anarchist. I'm simply saying that those laws must function as law, meaning they're universally applicable, not malleable to the emotions of your whims and emotions. That's not the role of the city government, to change the law to interpret it for the individual or for the day. So when that statement was made, I understood, okay, this is unfortunately not going to be what I thought it was going to be, a civic opportunity for my homeschool kid to come to City Hall and we would work together with City Hall about passing something, about who passes, and my kids would learn like a civics lesson. Instead, it became rather adversarial very quickly when he said, it means what I say it means, I am the law. And I was like, no, you're not. Well, that's not how we roll here. So at that point, I told him I would not be able to comply because that's not a standard that is universal or fixed for my understanding of law, but rather this is a personal whim. It's a little bit of petty tyranny. And I do not submit to that. I have, God, I have the freedom to exercise my obedience to law, not personality. And so that's what I was going to do in that case. And he told me that would mean that if I didn't take the hoop house down, that in 30 days, I would be taken to court by the city of Elmhurst and they would sue me and there would be fines if it was not taken down. And I said, I guess it's game on then.
At this point, you become the spiritual warrior as well as a gardener.
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Wow. Now, were you able to mobilize any support from your community?
Yeah. Over the next several years, I learned a lot about that. I had not been on social media at that point because I had other things to do. But obviously in 2015, lots of the rest of the world was on social media. So after I left that meeting, my husband and I were at that meeting where the city manager had made those comments, and we went home and I just was quiet and I went to God in prayer and thought, okay, what do we do? And I thought, sunlight, right? Sunlight's the best disinfectant, right? And God in Christian science is the sun. But let the sun shine. And so I called the media. And CBS News came out and did a news report on our hoop house. And this is the part I didn't know about how it was working. That news interview, that video clip, it got extracted and someone posted it on Facebook and it blew up. It went viral. Now, I wasn't on Facebook at the time, so I didn't know it. And when I was walking my daughter around the neighborhood, someone said, hey, you're winning in the court of public opinion. And I said, where's the court of public opinion? And she said, it's on Facebook. Oh. And from there, our posse was born. The community support started coming up. I found neighbors that offered all sorts of skills. This developed over a period of many months. This wasn't a overnight thing. We had to go to court. We lost in court. But people came out of the woodwork. We had videographers and audio engineers and people with all different skill sets, graphic designers who would help me design mail email campaigns and other people who were doing petitions door to door in the different wards of our city, all different skill sets in many hands. And I believe this is the multiplying power of divine love. Go forth and multiply the good. This was the good in the community coming out to support that principle of equality and freedom with which we persisted.
Good versus evil.
You can put it that way.
And perhaps it was as simple as that. Well, ladies and gentlemen, holy smokes, this is a very interesting warfare going on between good and evil, divine good, divine truth, and universal truth going up against the whim of somebody in City Hall, which is seemingly what we all go up against, even when we go to get a driver's license renewal or something or anything. We often run up against this City Hall. Now, how do we contend with it? Well, Nicole Virgil came up with a very good way of contending with it, because she contended with it and she won. She went up against City Hall and she won. And we're learning how. Michael Olson, this is the Food Chain Radio program with Nicole Virgil today, who is a gardener and a practitioner of Christian Science with the First Church of Christ Scientist, and you. So we ask you to please stay tuned, because we have to figure out how this story ends, and it's going to end really good. Stay tuned.
History buffs, this tale from Michael Olson's Tales from a Tin Can took place during the Battle of the Komondorski Islands, March 1943.
All the gunfire that had been aimed at the Salt Lake City was now coming directly for us. From my position up in the gun director atop the bridge, I could actually see the rounds coming from the Japanese cruisers. Captain would yell up, "Over or under?" I'd yell my guess back down, and he'd give the helmsman his orders. Those Japs had their batteries lined up right, I'll tell you. They dropped a dozen shots, short, then walk right up, as neat as you please. Their dispersion wasn't 20 feet, and that's what you want to see. Except, of course, if you happen to be on the wrong end of that gunfire. Hell, even the men down the fire room knew we were done for.
Tales from a Tin Can contains 424 tales by 44 sailors aboard the USS Dale, from Pearl Harbor to Tokyo Bay. Order your Father's Day copy at talesfromatincan.com. That's talesfromatincan.com. talesfromatincan.com.
Duke the Pug will soon turn 20, which is pretty good for a dog breed that averages 11 years. When Duke was 13, he lost a lot of hair, had a hard time getting up for a walk, and his bowel movements were not very moving. We started making his food instead of buying it. We cook up a big batch of rice, chicken, broccoli, carrots, and turmeric, freeze meal-sized batches, and thaw them at mealtime. We also sprinkle Arthrodex on each meal. Arthrodex is a complete blend of plant-derived minerals, vitamins, amino acids, and enzymes formulated to make old dogs young again. And it does. Duke the Pug does have his problems, but he has all his hair, loves daily walks, and has no problems with his movements. Breakfast is at 7, and if it's not there by 7:01, we all hear about it. Make your old dog young again. Pick up Arthrodex at NutriensToGo.com. And while you're at it, make yourself young again with a Healthy Body Start Pack. NutriensToGo.com. NutriensToGo.com.
You can earn a substantial income by farming for the city. All you need to do is take your crop to market and win the competition for the consumer dollars. There is a well-proven strategy for winning this competition. You will find it embedded in MetroFarm, the guide to growing in or near the city for the city.
Northland Berry News, Paul Otten.
What a book. It's obvious MetroFarm was not written by someone sitting in an ivory tower. It comes from the trenches, from the School of Hard Knocks. A superb job.
Ag reporter Nancy Barr. MetroFarm addresses just about every issue involved in planning, planting, growing, harvesting, packaging, transporting, and marketing of a crop.
Before you plant your seeds, pick up a copy of the Ben Franklin Book of the Year award-winning MetroFarm. Then plant your seeds and win the dollars. MetroFarm.com. MetroFarm.com. MetroFarm.com.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Yes, so much to say and so little time to say it, but we're telling a story today of somebody who went up against City Hall and won. And won the right to garden. And not only that, but won the right for everybody in her state to garden as well. Not a little victory, a big victory. Only the second state, Illinois became the second state in the United States to guarantee the right for people to grow food in their yard. It seems so amazing, Nicole, that only six states guarantee this right. So it is a huge right that you won in Illinois. A lot of it had to do with the fact that you were on the right side of the argument, and the city government was on the wrong side. And it took a lot for the city government to realize that it had made a mistake, did it not?
It did. After 3 or 4 years of pursuing it at the city level, they did vote to ban our hoop house in the city limits. And fortunately, I had been praying all along the way, and God had led me through a garden store to an introduction with a state senator who found out about my story right before our city banned it. This state senator said, you know what? This doesn't sound right. I'd like to write a piece of legislation. And so we were sort of on the runway to go to the state before the city even banned it. The city got a little bit of a surprise there after the ban. A few weeks later, they found out that a piece of legislation was up at the state house. And that usually takes a few iterations before it passes, because the senators have to get familiar with the legislation. You have to get, you know, it's a little bit of a process, but wasn't too long. I think we had three legislative sessions. And in 2021, the state law was passed in the state of Illinois, protecting all Illinois homeowners' right to grow food on their own property without interference, with the assistance of, I have to say, some great organizations, not the least of whom was Institute for Justice, which penned the legislation in its final form. They're great warriors for justice and equality. Ari Bargill, our attorney, did a great job. And the Illinois Environmental Council, they worked at the state level. They know all the players, you know, in the Illinois state legislature. So they were critical in introducing me to the right people in the state. Ari got it over the finish line, though. And there were some other organizations, local, like Advocates for Urban Agriculture and Sustain DuPage. All of these organizations and what wound up being thousands of individual Illinois state residents really came together and coalesced, because I do believe fundamentally people can't. Truth resonates with people. They know when they hear it, even if they don't want to concur with it, it buzzes. And you know that it's right on the inside of you. You put truth together with love and you've got a fire. And that fire is what kept me going many times when I wanted to quit, because this seemed so absurd, exhausting, ridiculous. We failed so many times before we had to keep going back to different committees and they kept stalling on stuff. But every time I got exhausted or overwhelmed, I would pause and I would take some time away. And what eventually would stir me back up again is I'd be driving around the city and I would see another hoop house, or I would see some device in someone's backyard. And I'd think, this is not equality. Why can't I do that which all my fellow residents are doing? And there's that law again, that law of equality and freedom would kick in. And I was obliged then as a scientist to stand for my God-given rights. And then I was back in again. So that was how it worked for me. I don't know if that's how it is for everybody, but I couldn't let it go, because I can't consent to my own lack of freedom. Someone else might consent to it, but I'm not going to consent to my own lack of freedom. And so then I had to stand and fight.
You know, standing on a hill, looking at a distant city, it resembles in character a confined animal feeding operation, a CAFO. And in a CAFO, the animals have no rights, but people have rights in the city, and people like you stand up and demand that right and win it for the rest of us who seem to be perfectly willing to subjugate ourselves to the pens that we live in. So, Governor
Michael,
Pritzker signed the bill, right?
He did sign the bill. I'm not proud of this to say that after the governor signed the bill, my city council still tried to stop us. They still tried to impede us by threading the needle in such a way that would make our hoop house so small that we could have one, but it'd be so small it'd be dollhouse-sized and not be usable. And so we still had to go back then. But by then, we really had the wind at our back after 5.5 years of prepping forward. We had such community support. We had truth, which Christian Science teaches truth is always the victor. So if you stand with truth, you're in good stead. And we just had to stay with it a little bit longer. And eventually the city came around and wrote into their own ordinances something very robust that protects everybody in Elmhurst for this type of usage.
And I suspect that would be a tough job for a city, for a municipal government to actually write rules that allow for freedom, and yet satisfy the neighborhood that things won't run amok. And it would be much easier for a city to say, "Thou shalt not do anything that I don't want you to do," which is what they tend to do. Because it's the easiest thing for them to do. That said, people love their freedom and they love their gardening. And as I mentioned at the opening, people who garden get the benefit not only of eating the food that they eat, but the spiritual uplift of actually growing something in a city, and just going up against the city in itself and growing things is kind of unnatural. And yet there's a truthfulness in that as well, don't you think?
Sure. Well, there's so many different benefits to this. I mean, sure, fresh food is the obvious one, and that's why someone engages in doing it. But also, for example, here in Illinois, the soil is very clay where we are. So when you're growing food, those roots are breaking up the soil, which makes the soil more able to absorb water so that cities like ours that have flooding issues are less impacted by flooding because the plants help the water get into the soil, whereas clay would make it more like pavement and just be runoff. That's a very significant benefit in an area like ours. It wasn't too long ago that we had the COVID pandemic and people were trying to stay away from grocery stores. Having food in your backyard, when you have an abundance of food, it's very easy to share that with your neighbors. This makes communities more resilient, right? So that food chain is not dependent on, you know, a certain big store or big delivery. I think there's so many benefits to this all the way around. It's just a no-brainer.
It is a no-brainer. And yet it is a no-brainer for governments. So how do we come to grips? You did it, and it took you 6 years. How do the rest of us who don't have 6 years to fight, what could we do to contend against City Hall and its lies that say the truth is what I say it is and not what it is? How do we contend with that?
Well, I would say two things to that off the top. First, you have examples who have gone before you. You know, I don't know if you know anything about bicycling, but there's this concept in bicycling called drafting, where if you ride behind someone, you get the benefit of them going first. It's kind of like the lead bird when birds fly out. The lead bird gets the most resistance, and then those who behind them, they have an easier time of it, right? So it's not that everybody has to be the lead bird. There's only one lead bird, and then they rotate. I was the lead bird for a little while. But because of those who have gone before you, there's a way that people can follow, which is not as difficult. It shouldn't take the next person 6 years, right? But they got to follow, right? They got to do the thing. But even before that point, the individual has to determine that they do not consent to other people taking their freedom from them. If you consent to petty tyranny and others taking your freedom, you're sunk before you start. Someone else cannot provide for you that which you consent to give away. Each individual has to determine, this is a value that I'm willing to stand for. Now, some people are going to be able to spend 6 years on it, some people 6 minutes, but you got to decide that it's worth standing for, at least to give your mental chutzpah to it, so that you've got some component of thought that says thus far and no farther. That's the beginning of it. And then you might meet, you might have an opportunity to speak at your city council or on your school board or at your card game or something. There will be a place for you to strengthen those muscles. If you don't strengthen them, they will atrophy. And if you don't use them, nobody else can use them for you. So my first call to arms is don't consent to giving away your freedom. Exercise those muscles and you will have the opportunity to strengthen them.
It's almost like losing the taste for real food, giving up, giving in, not fighting. It's almost like you're willfully forgetting what real food tastes like. So you'll satisfy yourself with eating something that's wrapped in plastic that came from thousands of miles away.
Feed inconvenience.
Yes. And it's so easy to say to the bureaucrat at City Hall, well, you might be crazy and you might be lying and you might be going against what is true, but I'll go along with you so I don't have to fight you. Yeah. Tough job. That's a tough thing to do. And you did it. And
It's not as tough as living with someone's heel on your neck. That's tough. It's easier to stand up and fight to me than to lay down and submit to the illegitimate authority. That's soul crushing. That's just, I can't do it. I hope that makes sense to you, the way I'm saying that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Step number one, stand up for truth, for what is true. And if you stand up for what is true, you're right. And it's a pretty easy thing to do, to know what's true and what's not true, is it not?
Well, especially because the truth has been laid out for us. We don't have to be the pioneers. The truth is revealed. Christ Jesus and the discoverer and founder of Christian Science, I would say, have clearly articulated the science of truth. We just need to follow it. Like, mathematics has been revealed. You don't have to invent it. Just obey the principle and you get the win, man.
So, simple as that. Where do we turn?
Yeah.
Where do those of us who don't know where to turn, where do we turn? Where did you turn for that strength?
I can tell you that the only way I was able to persist for as long as I persisted is through my lifelong study of Christian Science. Mary Baker Eddy is the discoverer and founder of Christian Science, and her seminal book on Christian Science, which is named Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, is a sure pathway to anybody who's ready and interested to find out what is actually the power of truth. I mean, boots on the ground. I don't mean something esoteric that's theoretical that you can pontificate about at a brown bag lunch. I mean, boots on the ground. How do I live with freedom so that I can exercise some sort of dominion in my own life and not fall prey to all the attempts to obliterate and eliminate our natural God-given rights? The science of Christianity has been, in my experience, the shortest line from A to B in what can be a very difficult to navigate human experience. So that's my recommendation, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy and a good holy Bible.
You say it's a real science.
Yes, sir.
Tell us how. One more time. How is it a real science?
Oh, how is it a real science? Well, any science, what are the attributes of any science? There must be a principle to observe. and follow, right? The scientific method says first you observe, right? There's a method to science. It's not just cattywampus, right? There's an order of operations. So in Christian Science, our, you might say, order is we begin with God. God is the Alpha and Omega. So we start there, and we have synonyms for God's names elucidated in the Bible. One of them is love that we've been talking about. So we start with love. We end with love. That's our baseline. It's critical function. Start with God. We don't start with problems in Christian Science. We don't work the problem. There will appear to be problems, but in our method to deal with problems, we start with God. We start with love, divine principle.
Can't think of a better place to start, certainly better than City Hall. And we'll go with that. Nicole Virgil, you're awesome. Gardener, practitioner of Christian Science with the First Church of Christ Scientists. And where do we turn? Where do we look? Where do we look first?
To God, to divine love.
Thank you very much. Thank you all for tuning in.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.